This is Mae Brussel. This is part two of World Watchers International. It's broadcast number 684, January the 14th, 1985. Now, I've rattled off a lot of letters for you of organizations MEES formed and Ronald Reagan forced. He has formed their love of the military. They're pushing mind control experiments at the hospitals and in the prisons. The terror of California. I did broadcast on that when Ronald Reagan was running for president. But not only is he president, but you have this attorney general with his mind for gathering names of protesters, people that worked with the Black Panthers, that helped them, that helped Cesar Chavez and tried to bring in wages for the farm workers, the Venceremos organizations, the Chicano groups. If you didn't like napalm to Vietnam, your name went on a list. If you approve of abortions, your name went on a list. Everything that you did to try to change society that was your legal right went into their heads, and not only did they gather and have gathered these massive computers, which they sent all over the world and to the BND in Nazi Germany, I call it Nazi Germany, that was set up by Reinhard Gehlen, but they set up the provocateurs for the killings, too, and the killing of People's Park, and hiring the Hells Angels to plow into people objecting to shipping napalm and objecting to Vietnam, the Phoenix Program, and protesting the war and the actual Nazi behavior in Vietnam that our country became so cruel and bestial, trained by members of the Gestapo working with the American Army. And Mies wanted that. He worked well with it. Reagan worked with it. But now Mies becomes the attorney general, and then you never, ever have a chance, any more than with the crime figures I mentioned, to overturn this or get him out, because if you can pass him on all this now, they'll say you didn't speak up earlier. There's a conference in Washington this summer, June 24th, 26th, under the auspices of what is called the Second Jonathan Institute Conference on International Terrorism. And this group had a long list of people who attended it. One of them, one of the presiding speakers and officers, was Lord Chalfont, C-H-A-L-F-O-N-T, of Great Britain. He is the partner with John Layman, Secretary of the Navy, the Abington Corporation, a very dangerous man, and he was not touched by any investigations that should have been done when John Layman was approved as Secretary of the Navy. Layman is ready and talked about World War III, how he's going to attack the Soviet Union. I've ordered the transcript of that. These people want the war, and when you talk about terrorism, that is their cover for preparing for the World War III. Another speaker was Jack Kemp, Representative Jack Kemp from Buffalo, New York, one of the most conservative in the country. And other people at this conference that were talking were people from Georgetown University's Michael Ledeen, the person who's close to Licio Gelli and the Masonic Lodge, that wants military dictatorships, tried four or five times in Italy, and is close to the White House. Arno de Borchgrave, who is a liar about disinformation, works with Mr. Moss and writes stories blaming the Soviets for what the United States is doing. Claire Sterling was part of the conference. Britain's Bernard Lewis, U.S. Senator Daniel Patrick Monahan, and attending the conference along with George Shultz, the Secretary of State, was White House Counselor Ed Meese. Also attending was Jean Kirkpatrick, who gave her famous speech at the United Nations on the Soviet Union, what they knew and didn't know when the Korean Airline went down. This is a team of pathological liars that would put the Reichstag to shame. What they could set off and what they have in the offing would give these people the total control of the United States, with, again, with no recourse. They have the guns and the weapons to do what they want. Another person that attended the meetings was Louis Giuffrida. I can't pronounce it right. G-I-U-F-F-R-I-D-A. Giuffrida. He's the head of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. That's another one set up by Edwin Meese. I should pronounce his name because I should be doing hours of broadcasting on FEMA before he takes over. And there's even talk that if there's a vacancy in the Supreme Court, that Giuffrida would become a justice of the Supreme Court. The total police mentality. And also attending the conference was William Webster. And de Borchgrave, as I say, works with Robert Moss, changes the stories of of history. And, of course, they keep pushing the Ajah-KGB connections and not the role of Licio Gelli in the context with Ajah, with the CIA, the Nazis, the very dangerous assassins and very much far the right than people imagine that already have been trying in Venezuela and Brazil, making arrangements to kill the Pope for other reasons. But in this case, they were trying to instigate and start a World War III if the Pope had died from the bullets of Ajah, and the links of his traveling through Bulgaria becomes a subject for Jean Kirkpatrick. Now, when Alexander Haig became Secretary of State, I read that the very first book on his desk before it was administered oath of office was Claire Sterling's book about terrorism on the left. Haig is closely tied with NATO. He was the head of NATO with Licio Gelli and the top people in Italy that want the military dictatorships, but they carry those books around like their Bibles. But the important thing about Ed Meese is this is the company he keeps. He's close to these people. And the fellow Robert Keith Gray, who bailed out his wife and got her a job when they had financial problems, quickly pulled in $40,000 a year for her. Robert Keith Gray represents the Georgetown Center for Strategic Studies. He charges them nothing. And Gray has close links to the Vatican. He was the one who pushed the ambassador to the Vatican that the United States hadn't had for many, many years. They work closely with the Knights of Malta, with this information, with the anti-Soviet line, and that's what Meese was doing in California. He was honed up great for that, and now as the Attorney General, it would be a nightmare. Now, you can write to the judiciary. I'll give you the address here. To U.S. senators, these are senators, and I'll give you their names. You can choose the ones you want. I'll give you a few on the air quickly, and then, as I say, you can send for this list if you don't have it already. The Senate Office Building is 112 Hart Senate Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20510. 112 the Hart Senate Office Building, 20510. Now, the members of the judiciary, hearing the Edwin Meese story again, one is Strom Thurmond. Now, Strom Thurmond was linked to Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple. Mrs. Thurmond worked for Robert Keith Gray. I think that he's too close to voting on Edwin Meese being the Attorney General when the area that would be touched in legal questions would touch. Mr. Gray has 150 clients. Talk about the World Commerce Corporation. He represents the who's who, and we've mentioned some of them on the air. Robert Keith Gray worked for Task Force 157 for George Bush. Strom Thurmond is part of that group, the Wilson, Turple, Nugenhan combine. So certainly if you want to write to him, say, you can't vote for Edwin Meese because you're too close and your wife are too close to Robert Keith Gray, Edwin Meese's closest friend, who bailed out Mrs. Meese's money, so therefore Meese will be indebted to him. So Meese can't make a decision against 150 corporations that Robert Keith Gray represents or Henry Kissinger represents because he was his boss over Task Force 157, and also their boss there was Bobby Inman, who now has these giant computers down in Austin, Texas, that can combine any information from all over the country and all over the world. So Strom Thurmond isn't the person you write to asking a favor. You write to him and tell him what you think about him. Charles Mathias, Jr. of Maryland, you might send some kind of a letter challenging his intelligence or his integrity on the conflicts of the provocateurs in California, the murders of people at Aldemont, at Isla Vista, the SLA burnings, the role of Meese here that have never been exposed. How can he become our Attorney General? You can write a letter and let them know you're intelligent. You don't have to be shy about what you know. And many of you have my past broadcasts, the sheets that accompany those. Just look at what I said about Meese. Look it up and paraphrase your own letters. Now, Paul Laxalt is part of the Senate Judiciary. Well, Laxalt is one of the closest friends of Robert Keith Gray. Laxalt has strong ties to the mafia, the organized crime. He suppressed the 60-minute program on his links to the mafia. What do you expect of the senator from Nevada, who was the governor He was there when Howard Hughes wasn't there and knew he wasn't there, never saw him. So the decisions our attorney general would make on any mafia stories, you know, Paul Exalt still brags about his friendship with Mo Dalitz, and their links to Robert Mayhew and the assassination are part almost legend, the organized crime link. So if there were appeals to open up the Kennedy assassination again, which is open for all time, what would Paul Exalt vote when he is so close to Robert Keith Gray, who befriends Mrs. Meese, and Gray can tell, just whisper anything into Meese's ears as the attorney general and gets what he wants. Orrin Hatch, another one of Utah, with strong, very conservative links to the John Birch Society, to all the fundamentalist organizations, and close to and working with Daniel Graham of the High Frontier on various organizations and front organizations. Orrin Hatch, supposedly on an anti-drug committee with Daniel Graham, the partner of Fritz Kramer. He's supposed to vote on Edwin Meese when many of his contacts in the past are linked to crimes that have been covered up so far that should have been opened up. Now, Orrin Hatch was on the committee to pass Donovan, and he knew something was wrong, Raymond Donovan, and he voted for him to be Secretary of Labor. So even though he specified that if Donovan had these connections, he couldn't vote, he voted for him, so he isn't his own boss, so he's supposed to vote on Meese. Robert Dole is on the Senate Judiciary, and he has political ambitions and seems to be looking a little more moderate than Ronald Reagan, so you might bring up a few points to him. John East of North Carolina, it would be very hard to appeal to him. You might say, if we open up the Kennedy assassination and go into the Green Berets and the Special Forces and Mr. Frankenberry's statements about how they were behind the training of the assassins who killed John Kennedy and shot in the window of Edwin Walker, how would you vote if Meese were the Attorney General? And we're talking about Fort Bragg in North Carolina. What would you think of that? And Jeremiah Denton of Alabama, a Knight of Malta, along with Mr. Casey, and Alexander Haig and a lot of other people in Washington. He is a great terrorist. He sees terrorism everywhere, if it's the left, if it's Castro, Fidel Castro, or Gaddafi, or domestic terrorism. Jeremiah Denton is not fair. He has his blinders completely over his eyes. He has the particular Ledeen Claire Sterling line down pat. It would be hard to ask him to be fair about voting about Mr. Meese. Now, another one on this committee is Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania of the Warren Commission. Are you crying? These are the people that are supposed to vote on Edwin Meese. These are the ones that I know are in Congress. I didn't check out a couple of these that whether they lost the election or up for re-election, but I'll give you their names anyway. Arlen Specter was the liar about the bullet that 399 that was supposed to go through John Kennedy's back and up the air through his Adams, John Connolly's, went through Kennedy's back and out his chest and into John Connolly and then into Connolly's arm and into his thigh, and it was found on the stretcher. Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania worked with the CIA because you had to be on the Warren Commission. I don't know how close he is to Edwin Meese, but Edwin Meese helped and Ronald Reagan helped suppress information of witnesses when Specter was working on the commission, but he wouldn't have asked for them anyway. They're all one of a kind. But he has certain political ambitions. I might suggest writing a letter to Arlen Specter. I may do that. Now, Joseph Biden of Delaware is fairly decent, and you might bring up things like the lab that Mrs. Meese put her money into, and let's find out who this character is, this Dr. Bryan, and why she had the necessity to borrow the $16,000 to give to him just the day after the inauguration when they hadn't paid for rental on their house in Washington yet. Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts is on this committee. I don't know how much work he'll do on Edwin Meese. I'm sure he's not interested in the covering up of too many crimes, whether it's the mafia or the Nazis or the Kennedy assassination. He's always looked the other way. It's very convenient, and I'm sick and tired of it, going to Africa and parading there and wanting to free prisoners there, which is very important, but why doesn't he go around this state and find out who killed his brothers and put a little interest into trying to save this country from those assassins? Howard Metzenbaum is the one fellow who's been very vocal about this particular matter, that he does not want Mr. Meese. Patrick Leahy of Vermont is somewhat of an unknown. You might write to him. Dennis DeCuccini of Arizona. Howell Heflin of Alabama. Of course, Arizona, Phoenix, Tucson is so filled with mafia, a home base of mafia and drugs, that I don't know that maybe he knows Meese would go along with those people, because that's Meese's reputation, as it was Ronald Reagan, is Reagan's, and it was Nixon's. They are working with the crime syndicate, and they're not going to prosecute, they're not going to nosy around. And how strong would these particular people be if there even was the kind of a Reichstag thing? Would they look back and say, we made a mistake? It's like the approval of Raymond Donovan for the Secretary of Labor. But now very many people are saying we made a mistake. Well, that's a little bit about Edwin Meese. I'm sure you have your own ideas and can come up with some. The main thing is that whatever you think or feel, do something, because it's now or never. This man, as Attorney General, will be a total disaster. And just as you see your freedoms taken away with Reagan wanting his own White House press service, he doesn't think the press is nice. You know how nice the press was to him these 4 years? All these things they could have brought up. And his 75 people that are under indictment or investigation now, they treated him with the kid gloves. Just, they're so kind to Reagan. I can't believe it. And now he has to have his own press service because he doesn't think they were kind enough. Well, I think his own press service is to get ready for the police state, where you issue the orders and don't have to have interviews or see anybody. What you say is final, and you will see him less and less. And that's why he's setting up his own press service inside the White House. Now, several weeks ago, I was talking about the Nazis up in Idaho, and I want to update a few things with you on that are very important, and then do more at a later time. Broadcast 679. I was, it went at length, that was in December the 10th, about these various Nazis from the Grand Dragon from Texas, the Klan up north in Idaho with the Aryan Nations, and Robert Miles, one of the people that was up there, the Grand Dragon of Michigan, and Don Black, who was appreciated that Ronald Reagan called them freedom fighters, the men that tried to invade Dominica. But I also mentioned somebody from Buffalo, New York, Alexei Erlanger, A-L-E-X-I-E-R-L-A-N-G-E-R, of the liberation movement of the German Reich from Buffalo, New York, that goes up north to that compound to have their reunions or gatherings every year of the Klan and the Nazis and the Posse Comitatus and so forth. The identity group all go up and have this big reunion. And Alexei Erlanger, the information I got about his name, was in the Oregonian, November the 18th, 1984. They mentioned that he came there from Buffalo, and I referred to labs and questions of germ warfare coming out of Buffalo. Well, David Miller in Florida got a transcript of this broadcast, and he immediately called me and reminded me in the book Aftermath by Ladislas Farrago, which is the story of the reunion and the rearming of Germans after the war. Where did the Nazis go and what happened to them? On page 384, it refers to several people of interest. One was President Wilfred Kernbach of Chicago, who announced that Alexei Erlanger of the Buffalo chapter of New York City was heading a drive to bring two famous German war heroes to the United States for a visit of our military institutions and our German community. One of the guests invited was Colonel Hans Ulrich Rudel, who did come to the United States and went through Rockwell and various military installations, and his other close friend was Colonel Otto Skorzeny. The old Skorzeny, called the most dangerous man in Europe, the man who took the Hitler funds, the Bormann funds out of the Swiss banks into Madrid, into Ireland, and disseminated them to Nazis to build up their corporations and form the Odessa. The very people meeting up in Idaho with the Klan and the Dragons and the Posse Comitatus are directly linked to Nazis such as Colonel Hans Ulrich Rudel, U-R-L-I-C-H, Ulrich Rudel, and Colonel Otto Skorzeny. So if you think that this is a group of individual kooks, have another thought about it. They are very dangerous. I just want to refer to two articles about them that may illustrate the point. One comes from the Oregonian, mailed to me by a listener who's been sending me all of these articles out of Oregon, December the 30th, 1984. And they're describing the man who wrote the book that was the prototype for the Nazi takeover of the United States called The Turner Diaries. You've heard about that book, but I don't know if you know about the man. His name is William Luther Pierce, and he quit the university. He taught at the University in Oregon at Oregon State University until 1965, and then left there and went east. This article from the Oregonian says, Pierce quit his job as an assistant professor of physics at the Oregon State University in 1965. He later became editor of the National Socialist World, a magazine published by the American Nazi Party, written to appeal to the academic world, his college people, the intellectuals, and the professionals in this country. The Turner's Diary that he wrote tells about the American media controlled by the Jews. It publishes a hate list for extermination, the blacks, the Jews, the Asians, the Chicanos, the intellectuals, government employees, mixed marriages. Now, this William Luther Pierce was born in Atlanta, Georgia, of course. He got his master's and doctor's degree at the University of Colorado, important nest for a lot of these Nazis in that area. Record shows he worked as an assistant professor of physics at Corvallis University for 3 years, and it gives his salary $8,000 for a nine-month year. And at the same time, he was doing basic research directed with a $35,000 grant from the United States Air Force Science to do research in semiconductors, teaching at Oregon State University. While at Oregon State University, he joined the John Birch Society. He supported Barry Goldwater in 1964, the candidacy for president, and worked for the GOP when he lived in Oregon. He, in 1966, he gave an interview, and he said his interest in the American Nazi Party started when he was at the Oregon University, Oregon State University, and he was disturbed by people, the intermarriages, the interracial marriages. It profoundly disturbed him, and that's when he joined the John Birch Society. Pierce refused to tell the officials where he was going when he quit his job, but when he went away, he said he was taking a research job at Pratt and Whitney Company in New North Haven, Connecticut. Pratt and Whitney is United Technology. That's where Alexander Haig, later knighted as a Knight of Malta, and the head of NATO, was president of United Technology. And Mr. Pierce goes there. Then he leaves United Technology, Pratt and Whitney, that branch, and he joins the American Nazi Party that was originally founded by George Lincoln Rockwell. I mentioned that before. Pierce quit his job. He was making $29,000 a year at Pratt and Whitney, and took post as editor for the National Socialist World. Rockwell, the party's commander and Pierce's mentor, that's the fellow that Lee Harvey Oswald had his name in his address book, Rockwell of the Nazi Party. Rockwell was murdered by another follower in 1967, and then the Nazi movement splintered. Interesting enough that Rockwell was the mentor of Mr. Pierce, who wrote the script for the takeover and overthrow of the United States. And when Rockwell is killed, in comes a man who was a professor at the University in Oregon, who worked for the United States Air Force with a science grant of $35,000, and then goes to United Technology, Pratt & Whitney, and takes a $29,000 job. And then as soon as Rockwell, with his connections to Oswald, is killed in 1967, he takes over the party, the National Socialist White People's Party, a Nazi group, and he becomes the prime information officer for the party, and it was headed at one time by white supremacist Matt Kohl, K-O-E-H-L, one of the stronger Nazi groups to emerge after Rockwell's death. Kohl was that member of the Posse Comitatus that was shot down and killed with the barn and weapons, all the weapons that he had stockpiled when the federal agents came in. It was Pierce who was responsible for putting the group's telephone answering machine on a recorded message in 1970 calling for the murder of Senator Mark Hatfield, George McGovern and William Fulbright. They are traitors. They don't support the war in Vietnam. And he said there's only one way to deal with a traitor. You kill him. He also has answering services where he gives the name and addresses of Jews in your community so you can find them. In his novel that he wrote, Mr. Pierce, the Turner Group has a secret membership, and they would take over the nuclear missile complex at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, which is very possible with his connections to the Air Force and a network of very secretive professors and intellectuals ready to do the job. Ultimately, they would trigger a nuclear war between the Soviet Union and the United States on the presumption the major cities contain most of the blacks and most of the Jews. And most U.S. cities are destroyed in the Armageddon. 90% are in the liberated zone. And then the organization, that he calls it, would use nuclear weapons all simultaneously to destroy Israel. And Turner's group then begins what they call the Day of the Rope, in which execution squads move through the country, killing non-whites and mongrels. The streets of Los Angeles, for example, are lined with hanged bodies of professors and white persons who have married blacks. A number of the murders were committed by general citizens rather than the execution squads. They get into that. He says, I'm sure that without the forceful lesson of the Day of the Rope, we would not have so quickly elicited this kind of citizen cooperation. They all come in and help them. And then from now on, when all the Jews have been killed, and he uses Los Angeles as an example, from now on, it's uphill, reorganizing, re-education, rebuilding this whole society, and ultimately the neo-Nazi group will have created a radically and racially pure society. And that is the script that is used not only by a few up north, but throughout the country, throughout the world, with links to people like Otto Skorzeny and Buffalo, New York, the top Nazis of the Reich, who are continuing this, and John Birch Society, of course, used Mr. Revilla Oliver, who wanted to gas all the Jews in America and said that at a 4th of July celebration. Now, just quickly, I want to refer to a New York Times article, December 27th. It's a long, almost a half a page of the New York Times by Wayne King. Links of the anti-Semitic band bring six-state parley. Six different states began to get together because their allegations are that they will destroy the federal government and the FBI, and they've had shootouts with the FBI. So up to this point, the Klan have not been a threat to the United States. The Nazis have not been a threat. The FBI never cared about them. But finally, the agents from Washington, Alabama, California, Colorado, Idaho, Oregon, met in Seattle to discuss their strategies. As I say, that Gordon Call was killed in May of 1983, but he was shooting at FBI agents, and several FBI agents have been shot. Now, their operation involves counterfeit bank robberies. There was just a bank robbery up in Canada, $53 million, a couple of weeks ago. The $3 million, the $1 million don't count, it was $53 million. And remember the great Brinks robberies that have been linked to the Nazis and the great train robbery linked to Otto Skorzeny in Europe and the money spent in Brazil and South America. There's been counterfeiting, there's been murders, and now they're servicing because there comes a time where you stop talking and you come out in the open, and they have the weapons. I'm sure that a lot of the missing weapons from these various stockpiles that we've been reading about have gotten into their hands. They have the means, they have the technology. But this Mr. Pierce that wrote this book, The Turner's Diary, is an activist in every sense of the word. He's very clear. He's reaching, as he says, the college professors. He's drawn big salaries. He's gotten Air Force contracts. Now, the church, the Aaron Brotherhood, was set up by a man that worked at Lockheed, the engineer from Lockheed that's up in Idaho. And so Mr. Butler, so these people do have the technology and the inroads inside the corporation. And I always said Lockheed was the umbrella organization with the Hughes Corporation for the Nazification of America. This is very scary. I have a lot more to discuss, but my time is up. I have to stop because the tape is running out and the hour is running out. We can't go any further. So this is Mae Brussel. We'll have to wind up for this evening. Write your letters on Edwin Meese. I'll be back with you next week on KAZU-FM. in Pacific Grove, California.